Hello and welcome to the Scholar Circle. I'm Maria Armudian. In this hour, climate change, receding glaciers, and melting ice sheets are causing the oceans to rise dramatically. What does that mean for the world's coastal cities? Average global sea levels will rise by 20 to 30 feet, say researchers. What could the rise mean for coastal cities all over the Earth? Two experts join us. Andrea Dutton is a professor in the Department of Geological Sciences at the University of Florida. She is the author of Ice Volumes and Sea Level During the Last Interglacial that was published in the journal Science. Brian Fagan is an emeritus professor of anthropology at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He's the author of more than 40 books, including his latest, The Attacking Ocean, The Past, Present, and Future of Rising Sea Levels. Welcome, Andrea Dutton, Brian Fagan. Great to have you both with us. Brian Fagan, I want to begin with you, your research for the book, The Attacking Ocean. Let's start with where you start, the Ice Age. Sea levels, you said, were something like 120 meters lower than they are today. But the change was gradual. How did this start and come up to where we are today?
Well, basically, over the last 10,000 years, as I understand it, there was a fairly rapid rise after the Ice Age when warming began. It was irregular, but the rising continued. And then about 6,000 BC, maybe around there, maybe a little later, things stabilized. And there was a long period when there were very minor changes. And then after 1860, the rise has resumed and I believe now is accelerating. So it's a sort of pattern of stop and start.
The rise that was occurring before the stable period, what do we know about what was causing it then?
This is really, I think, more in Andrew's area than mine. But what was going on was that the Ice Age was ending. There was widespread global warming. There was extensive melting of the ice sheets which covered North America and covered Scandinavia and elsewhere. And sea levels began to rise with this discharge of meltwater into the ocean. And then you also got very complex and little understood adjustments of the Earth's crust going on, which varied considerably from one area to another. And the result was that the geography of much of the world changed. I mean, Scandinavia and Alaska were separated. The continental shelf that practically joined Southeast Asia to Australia was vanished underwater. You've got the North Sea was flooded by 5500 BC. England was separated from the Channel and so on. There were very, very radical changes. This apart from changes in vegetation and so on. But the shifts in recent years have been, quite dramatic. What is going on at the moment, I'm told, is a little more cooling than usual. So the point about climate change and all these things is that they're not regular. They vary tremendously. And you get cycles where not much happened, then you get a cycle where things happened. And this is true of all climate change.
Andrea Dutton, let's bring you in. Now, you've also looked back as far as the Ice Age. Why do we start there?
What we were just talking about, coming out of this last Ice Age, this is a time period when you had large ice sheets covering vast portions of the northern hemisphere. And as we were just talking about, those ice sheets retreated and sea level rose. And then it stabilized somewhat. So when we're talking about sea level change, and particularly looking into the future, we don't actually really want to be thinking about the changes that happened between the Ice Age and today. That was a very different dynamic of these ice sheets over these large continents in the northern hemisphere. What we really want to understand now is what's happening to these large polar ice sheets that we still have in Greenland and Antarctica, and what's going to happen to them as we go into the future. So that's the reason my research actually focuses on periods of time in the past that are warm periods when we had ice sheets in a similar configuration to today, so meaning ice on Greenland and Antarctica, to understand how sensitive those ice sheets are to changes in temperature.
I suppose that is what you meant by radiative forcing?
Yes. So one of the main drivers, of course, is how much of the sun's energy is coming into the Earth at a given time. And so one of the periods that I study is called the last interglacial. So that's before the last ice age, when sea levels were higher than today. But the temperatures were pretty similar, but a few degrees warmer at the poles. And one difference back then is that the northern hemisphere was receiving a lot more solar radiation during the summertime, which we think had something to do with the warmer temperatures there. What we're looking at today, though, is a very different scenario. So what's driving the climate change? The changes are, for one thing, happening much faster. Temperature is changing much faster. And the forcing in terms of the increase in temperature is global scale. It's not focused just in the northern hemisphere. The increase in CO2 in our atmosphere is causing the entire globe to warm.
Brian Fagan?
I agree with that. I mean, she's dealing with a whole new generation of research, which is very exciting. And the point is, you can't look at climate change except globally, and we tended to focus on the northern hemisphere.
You actually opened your book with these storms that are occurring, particularly with Katrina and Sandy, and how massive they have become and more frequent they have become. How are these things related? How come climate change translates into these storms, and how is that all related to sea level?
The most important thing about rising sea levels and extreme weather events, and I believe the climatologists, and Ajahn may know more about this than I do, are forecasting that there were going to be, or predicting there were going to be many more severe events. The big real threat, human-wise, is obviously strong winds and so on, but it is the sea surges which accompany these and which inundate densely populated coastal areas, of which, of course, New Jersey is one. The real serious problem in the immediate future is Bangladesh, which is, as you know, very prone to cyclones. And this whole area, which lies very close to sea level, has very dense populations in the millions. And the effects of this mean that millions of people are basically losing their land permanently in the long term, apart from the dangers of contamination of groundwater and so on. And we're going to be facing an issue of environmental refugees, which is going to get very serious globally, I think.
You actually mentioned a few other places in the book in addition to Bangladesh. You talked about the Pacific Islands. You mentioned the Bahamas. You mentioned Vietnam. What is the scope as a big problem for issues of climate refugees?
The big issue is acceptance. For example, if you take Bangladesh, and let's say, just for the sake of argument, they need to move 10 million people, where are they going to go? They're not going to go to Myanmar, and Myanmar doesn't want them. India doesn't want them. Apart from political and social stresses, they have serious problems themselves. And the only alternative is to develop international policies which deal with a very, very difficult problem, which is the moving of subsistence farmers who have very close emotional relationships to their land into countries that will accept them where they have no skills which are useful in the modern industrial economy. And this is a very, very serious problem because it intersects problems in every single nation and areas like South Dakota, where I'm sitting, which are hundreds of miles from the ocean, because where are people going to go?
And there's also vulnerable parts in the U.S. you mentioned. You said it was concentrated in the South.
Mainly in the South because of the nature of the shoreline and the geology and so on. And the parts of the East are very vulnerable. The West Coast is not quite so bad. But the real, real problem areas beyond the Arctic, obviously, are places like Shanghai, low-lying areas where there rarely are millions of people in the way in urban environments, and you have the option. Do you wall them off or at vast expense, or do you pay the bills when it happens and people die or whatever? And these are very serious problems which are going to come home to roost more and more, I think, in the next century.
Andrea Dutton, let's bring you back in here. It sounded like the work that you're doing suggests that the average global sea level can rise 20 to 30 feet?
Yes, that's right. So this time period I mentioned before, the last interglacial, where it was only a couple degrees warmer at the poles. What we've done is we've gone back and looked at what elevation we can find fossil corals. So corals grow close to the sea surface, and that's one method we can use to reconstruct where sea level was in the past. So a lot of the sites that I go to, you can see these corals sticking way above sea level now. And we've determined that the peak sea level during this time period was probably between about 5.5 to 9 meters above present sea level. So that's something like 18 to almost 30 feet.
Do we have a sense of how soon that will happen?
That is the multi-billion dollar question, right? We know that sea level rise is inevitable in our future. And so what we want to know, what everyone wants to know, is how much, and in particular, how quickly is that going to happen? That's a very difficult question to answer because the models that we have about the physics of how these ice sheets will respond dynamically like this are basically not good enough for us to do good projections into the future. And that's why I've taken the approach of looking into the past, and we're trying to determine when these things happen. When do ice sheets collapse, and how quickly does that happen? At this stage, we can't tell you how quickly. We know that it obviously takes some time. So as you warm the Earth's atmosphere, it will take some time for the ice sheets to respond. But a lot of the research that's come out, even I'd say in the last decade, is really pointing us towards thinking that the ice sheets can respond a lot quicker than we used to think they could. So it's not going to happen overnight. You're not going to get 30 feet of sea level rise, right? But the point I like to make to people is you really have to start to think about what commitment are we making to sea level rise. Because if we warm the atmosphere by, you know, a couple degrees at the poles, we're going to cross that within a matter of decades, right? So we may be committing ourselves to this type of sea level rise in the future for the future generations.
If we look into history, sometimes it's a good predictor, sometimes it's not a good predictor to the future. What can we look at historically that might give us some guidance, Brian Fagan?
Practically nothing. I mean, as Andrew's pointed out, and this is really important research they're doing, I mean, they're really attacking the million-dollar question. The basic variable is there were just so many people, and there was no precedent that really would tell you how people will react and what we can do. We're really on our own, in my humble opinion.
Andrea?
So historically, there actually is a lot we can learn, not necessarily about what's going to happen, but what has happened tells us a lot about the system. So if we look at, there are sea level records that have been generated over, say, the past 2,000 years in great detail, looking at salt marsh sediments. And what they tell us is that for most of that 2,000 years, there were pretty minor changes in sea level. But in the late 1800s, that sea level started to rise dramatically, just about the same time as temperature rose dramatically due to industrialization and putting CO2 into the atmosphere. So what we can say is this type of sea level rise within the past 2,000 years is unprecedented, right? So we can see there's this really rapid response of sea level to changes in temperatures. And that's an important thing we can take away from the historical record.
Yeah, but it's a fairly shallow historical record by my standards, but she's absolutely right. This is very, very important.
Brian Fagan, would you say, since you're kind of looking at this from the big picture of what are we going to do as a humanity, would you say that primarily what people have to do now is start planning to adjust?
Yes. I think a number of things got to happen. I think one of them is that we've really got to start thinking about this. It's a political issue. It's a very complex economic and social issue. And we really need to start planning. The problem is that our whole system and life is set up for short-term thinking. And this is a problem for our great-grandchildren. About the only people who are thinking about this in the long term that I know of, the Dutch, and they're planning for, Andrew may know the figure, but I think it's 100,000-year events, something like that. And that's a very long feeling. And even them, I know, are having some resistance from the present generation. Why should we pay for this? And things like that. These are the sort of issues which are going to become more and more prevalent as this situation intensifies. But at the moment, there is no serious thinking about it in most countries in the world.
Andrea Dutton, where do you see the future of your research with what you've now discovered?
It's pretty clear to us that during this last interglacial period that the West Antarctic ice sheet pretty much collapsed. So large portions of this ice sheet are currently grounded below sea level. So it can be pretty sensitive to warming ocean waters from underneath the ice shelf, and it can retreat very rapidly. So we're pretty sure that this collapsed during that time period, and we're debating about when it happened, under what conditions, and how quickly. So this is one of the directions that we're moving into, and we're trying to understand, you know, did sea level rise gradually, or was it very rapid? Is it kind of a nonlinear response? Those are the types of things that are going to be really important knowledge to have as we move into the future.
When I tell you I've spent the last 2 years looking about ancient animals, you will understand. What Andrew's doing is of enormous importance, because what they're addressing, they're using the remote past, the recent past, to look at what might happen. And they're doing it in very realistic terms which is scientifically intelligible to a wide audience. And this, to me, is enormously important.
Well, thank you both so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Andrea Dutton is a professor in the Department of Geological Sciences at the University of Florida. She is the author of Ice Volumes and Sea Level During the Last Interglacial that was published in the journal Science. Brian Fagan is an emeritus professor of anthropology at the University of California, Santa Barbara. He's the author of more than 40 books, including his latest, The Attacking Ocean, The Past, Present, and Future of Rising Sea Levels.